Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and today I'm out for a walk at Kincaid Park here in Anchorage with Bhaktimarga Swami, who is also known as the Walking Monk. Bhaktimarga, thank you so much for joining me out here today.
It's a pleasure being outdoors and being with a fellow companion who's into the out-of-doors.
What should I call you? How should I address you? Are you Swami? Are you Bhaktimarga?
Yeah, you can say Swami. That's fine. That's
okay.
Easy,
then that we'll go with
two
that.
Two syllables. Keep it at that.
Well, I was really excited when I heard you were in town. I just came back from a trip myself yesterday, and I heard that you were in town for just a day or so, and so I tried to track you down last night, and I was really really happy to get to go for a walk out here. You're known as the walking monk because you are a monk and you go on long walks.
That's right. Yeah, it started back in 96 when I decided to do a trek across the country where I'm from Canada. And so that took a good 7.5 months to start from the west coast right to the east coast, as far as east as you can go, to Cape Spear in Newfoundland, close to where the Titanic made its dive.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then periodically I'd make other walks, long stretches. I started on the Trans-Canada Highway. Of course, after Canada, I really felt, let me do a few other countries. Let's try to knock off Ireland, Israel, some of the more tropical ones, Guyana, Trinidad, Mauritius, the Fiji Islands, and then I had to do the States. I had to come. couldn't miss out on that one. The opportunity from Boston right over to San Francisco on what's called the oldest highway in America.
Which highway is that?
Well, it's called the Old Lincoln Road, also known as Highway 80. Goes through Chicago, okay. Starts from Boston, and that was a great experience. Mind you, I couldn't stay on that highway because, you know, what looked like an innocent little road in some spots turns into a 4-lane, 6-lane highway, and then basically you have to do sort of a jump, look at something that's north of you or south of you that runs parallel. And so that was the methodology.
Yeah, because, I mean, among other things, I guess pedestrians aren't allowed on I-80.
That's right. And it's going to be rather boring and dangerous, and you wouldn't be going to see the people, you know. You wouldn't make those kind of contacts. You know, you want to go through the towns and villages and make those kind of connections. And that's a big part of the walk, connecting.
One thing that that's obvious if you look at us here, I'm dressed like I'm out for a run at Kincaid Park, and you're wearing a saffron robe of a Hare Krishna monk.
That's right.
So maybe we should start with that. When did you become a Hare Krishna monk, and how did that come about?
Well, I guess we see some moose scat here.
Oh, is it moose? Okay.
Oh, yeah, I think, I got it. That's one thing you learn when you're on the road.
you can step over these things without even looking down.
That's right. You get the dung, you study it, and you look at the samples. Well, so I was, back in when I was 19, I was going through a period of just self-search, and I looked at my own, like, Christianity that I was raised in. Never left it, I would say. Never left it. But, you know, in that time, there was the Beatles craze, and they went to India to see Maharishi Mahesh Yogi at Rishikesh, which is in the foothills of the Himalayas.
Right, George Harrison in particular.
He was the one that really sort of grabbed it. And there were other celebrities like Peter Sellers, Mia Farrow. I don't know if that rings a bell. Some big celebrities. They were all going to India. So what's this craze about India and culture and so on like that? So, you know, having a little bit of a fascination for myself towards the culture, I just started to dabble a little bit into some of the literature. So I met monks from the Hare Krishna movement first in Toronto, Vancouver, and then from there read the books, Eastern Thoughts, sort of took my fancy, and One thing led to another, and I visited a temple, Toronto, Montreal. I said, I like this. I felt myself to be a little bit of a misfit, and just trying to find my place in the world. And, you know, being a monk, a monastic person, it's not for everyone.
No,
it's,
no, it's certainly a commitment. Yeah, you're originally from southwestern Ontario.
Yeah, someplace. Southwestern Ontario is where I came from.
Like near Windsor, Detroit? That
yeah,
kind of
that's
area?
Right. That's right. Actually, a day's walk from the famous Uncle Tom's Cabin. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
I know the cabin. I don't know the place, though.
Okay. Harriet Beecher Stowe, she wrote the novel
Bear.
Uncle Tom's Cabin.
That's yeah. not moose, that's bear. There.
That's right, that's right. We're getting all the samples today. Right, and you know, according to what I heard, Lincoln mentions that while you sparked something there, you know, to do with the Civil War. I'm sure there's a lot of political, yeah, other, let's say, complexities there. But, you know, so the Reverend, I can't remember his name right now, the Black Reverend who was born into slavery, he opened up a community there, and agricultural community. So refugees were coming into Canada, which was a British colony at the time, and gave them shelter. So that's where I'm from, that area.
Okay. And you grew up in a rural area.
That's right, I mean, on a farm. My dad would get me up in the morning, and that's where, you know, simple austerities or chores began.
Yeah.
For me, get up at 5:30, milk a family cow and whatever else is needed, pitching the manure and pulling out weeds in the garden and so on. And so that's sort of like the humble beginnings of my life, in this life anyways.
And yeah. You, growing up on the farm, you said that you felt like a little bit of a misfit, that you didn't quite fit in. You were in art school, I believe, when you found the Hindu faith.
Yeah, well, you know, I was doing really good in the fine arts course. I just had that, you know, natural proclivity towards artistic outlet, and but it wasn't gratifying enough, you know. So I just had to be, there had to be something there for me, and that balance. And so, again, the spiritual component was important. And although I was raised Catholic, I like I said, I didn't abandon it. I just saw, okay, here's something that's quite Catholic, but it has just a little bit more of the richness. There's a little depth there that I wasn't getting before.
Do you think that depth was more the religion itself or the monastic lifestyle and the commitment to that?
Well, I think it was both. You know, the philosophical end of things really was intriguing for me. And then the lifestyle of simple living, high thinking, which is a quote from Gandhi, it comes natural in a monastic setting, you know. And like, you get up early in the morning and you start doing mantras and chanting. And if you're up to it, sway a little bit and dance, you know.
Yeah, right.
The day starts on a happy note. Like today I was at Sand Lake. That's where I go when I'm, you know, here. Well, every morning I get up and just walk over there to do some mantras. And one woman over there who was getting in the lake in one of those contraptions, she said, oh, happy Monday. I said, oh, yeah, it's true. Mondays can be happy, and why not every day? And so that's the point, you know, start on a happy note, start on a spiritual note, and let that carry you through for the rest of the day. And that's what, why it sort of clicked with me, Krishna consciousness, higher consciousness, less is more kind of lifestyle, adopting that kind of philosophy. And so I've been with it, and that's like 49 years ago that I kind of like formally got involved.
Right, 1973, was it?
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
You were in college.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
Then did you abandon the fine arts degree, or did you?
Well, I did. I had 1 month left to finish my first year, and I was doing quite well. I was one of the better students, but it just wasn't catching. And I'm not one to kind of drop things and, you know, like, I believe, take a project up and finish it. You know, if you're going to go up a mountain, here we should talk, you're not going to stay there.
Right.
Come down to the bottom. And so it was a little bit like that. So this was a radical adjustment for me, but you know, because of that era, you did things radically and you lived slightly dangerously. You lived with some bravado. You do things that were a little against authority, parents, etc. And so
I was going to ask, what did your parents think of this?
Yeah. Well, they were a little quite concerned, but I assured them that, I'm just trying something out here. And of course, 1 year passed and I'm still trying it out. Yeah. 5 years go by and I'm still at it. And then finally, okay, that's great, as long as you're happy. And, you know, when they kind of looked more deeply at it, a lot of my peers were just struggling with their relationships. Some cases, you know, substance abuses. And so they felt, well, I'm in a pretty safe situation. So they were right. Happy for me.
All things considered, this isn't a bad option.
You know, and in those days, you know, like we were kind of a curiosity because it was a new movement in a very set landscape of, you know, the status quo, make your money, be on the 9-to-5, etc. And so here we were looking at something that might go against the grain of that kind of culture, you know, counterculture.
Yeah.
It was an expression of counterculture. And yet, at the same time, a monastic life was quite common in India for thousands of years, as we have it in the Buddhist tradition, Christian tradition, and even our indigenous people in the Americas. You know, young folks would go on a vision quest and take that time off and go for that, what we call tapasya, a little bit of austerity and be by yourself and try to somehow or other connect with the world and see what the trees are saying to you, what the plants, the ground underneath you, and the stars, what are they telling you to do? Going for that kind of guidance.
It sounds as though initially out of art school, what it most attracted you was the culture, the monastic culture or the Hare Krishna culture. But then you got into walking long distances later, is that right? Or has that always been a part of your life?
Yeah, that's right. So first, one big draw for me to this culture was the plant-based diet. You know, we were raised on a farm. We see the animals that we bred and we're like, came out like cute little pets, you know. Yeah. We can name them and then eventually, you know, they're on the dinner table. There was something just didn't sit right.
Yeah.
So I would just say I had taken up a lot of activities in our institution and administratively and also in the kitchen. You know, our guru, his name's Prabhupada, he said, just try to be a good all-arounder, you know, try to be good at almost anything possible. And so that I was doing. And then after a while I felt, well, maybe I should think about something a little different. I'm kind of missing out. We're in our bubble and I want to see the world. I want to see what's going on in the world. Like, you know, I missed Michael Jackson's moonwalk.
Because you were cloistered. And
living in a kind of a shelter, right? And then, the whole, the style of music, disco. And of course, some people say you didn't miss anything there.
Right.
but it was nice to just to connect a little bit with people again. And so I decided, let's go out there. Let's go for a little change. Let's do what monks traditionally do and go out for long pilgrimages. That's really what you would call these long walks when it has that spiritual component to it, when it's introspective walking, not just walking for a workout or running for a workout. It's a little bit more touching, developing, cultivating the spirit within. So that's how it differs. And that's how I see it. Like, say, when I'm doing the long walks, I'm doing a lot of mantra meditation, and that just gives it a little bit of greater depth than just going for a good workout. I believe it's more like going for a workout and also a work-in. you know, cultivating your inside.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a, I was just on a bike trip myself just last week. I just came back the other night from it. I like to go on long bicycle trips, and I've done some trips that have been up to a month of just riding the bicycle every day, which I can imagine is a lot like getting up and just walking every day.
Yeah.
I did this trip with a friend of mine who's a school teacher, and in school, they're just starting, today is the first day of teachers in school, and at her school, they are doing what they call explorations. And while we were on this trip, for some reason, we were talking about asking the question, what is an exploration? I mean, what does that mean? So we looked up the definition, and I actually wrote it down here on my notes, and it is the action of traveling in or through an unfamiliar area in order to learn about it, or the act of searching for the purpose of discovery. And it says exploration occurs in all non-sessile animal species, including humans.
Oh, wow.
Non-sessile, I think, means, I had to look that one up. That means species
who, know that one.
They don't move. I think a mollusk is non-sessile.
Yes, right. So, mobile and immobile, I guess, entities like trees and that kind of thing.
Right. Or, yeah. So, all animals explore. And you were just talking about exploring, getting a work in.
Yes, not
just about getting exercise. But I think that a lot of people, me included, if I go for a long bike ride, one of the things that I like most about it, just going in one direction all day, every day for a month or so, is that you never really know what's over the next hill or around the next corner.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's an external exploration. Mm-hmm. And I think people can really relate to that. But you just talked about an internal exploration or meditation.
Right. Well, it's an adventure and you're enjoying the scenery and the panoramic, whatever. There's also a lot of time you have to yourself. So you can't help but touch the three phases of time. You know, the past. Naturally, I think every one of us has a section in the day we think about what happened before, whether it was good or bad or ugly. Or you think about the future with projects that are yet to come, your dreams you want to fulfill. And then probably the most important one throughout the course of the day is yet, what are you doing right now? You know, paying attention to details. And okay, what is that scat that we just saw? What animal does that belong to?
Right.
Or, tasting a few things. Of course, you have to know your vegetation a little bit, or, you know, the wild berries. But it's a little bit about being very much here in the present. And it's just like, for the first walk I did, I was coming near the end to the city of Halifax. And someone from the CBC came, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And she had one of those tape recorders, if you remember those old relics.
Yeah, I do.
She was asking all the right questions. Why are you walking? And I said, well, it's for the spiritual healing of myself and the spiritual healing of the nation. And then she says, well, when did you start? And et cetera. How many pairs of shoes have you worn? And it takes about four pairs, just to let you know.
To get across the country?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before they really
wear
down.
If you don't scuff your feet.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she asked the one question. She said, now that you're almost finished the walk, what was one of the most compelling experiences that you had? Oh, and there we have a moose.
Oh, yeah. There he is.
The beautiful antlers. Do you mind if I take a picture?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I get that all the time.
Yeah.
You get that in the city of Toronto.
Right. Yeah, big bull. Yeah. And while Swami's taking a picture of this big bull moose, I will let you know that you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm Adam Verrier, and today I'm going for a walk around Kincaid Park. Specifically, we're on the Leakage Trail today. And I'm walking with Bhakti Marga Swami. I had a few more questions.
Okay.
I mean, some of the things that you've said have just brought up more and more questions,
especially about preparation. The CBC lady. Okay.
Yeah.
So she asked me the question, what's the most compelling thing that something sticks in your mind? And, you know, I just froze with my thoughts. And I said, I don't know, was it getting close to the grizzly bear encounter or being like nipped in the backside when I was trying to deal with the call of nature, and some wasps, hornets came at me. That's kind of an embarrassing situation, but it did happen by Lake Huron. And so I didn't know, but then it dawned on me, well, you know, the greatest thing that happened on this walk is you're standing there and I'm standing in front of you, and I'm trying to think of the answer. And, you know, I think that's the greatest thing that ever happened on this walk. You know,
it's just right now, in this moment.
Right. Yeah. So she picked up on it right away and said, oh yeah, being there, being present in the moment. And you know, when you pay attention to the details around you, you just enjoy it so much more, instead of going too much in the fast lane. Like the saying goes, I'm sure you've heard it, enjoy the walk, enjoy the ride, whatever. And, you know, don't be too anxious to get to the end. Enjoy the walk. That's really what it is.
Yeah, I suppose otherwise you're the dog who caught the car. And what do you do next?
Right.
I mean, you've walked across, and I don't think we've mentioned this yet in our talk, but you've walked across North America 5 times.
That's right.
Plus a lot of walks in other places.
Yeah.
Why did you go on your first walk? What is it that gets you out the door? What is the purpose going
for
a long walk?
Well, there was one thing that was sort of happening. I'll give you a couple of things. That, you know, the year prior, Canada was looking at a referendum. Like the province of Quebec was thinking about segregating and becoming like establishing themselves like Scotland.
Mm.
Will be in Canada, but not Canada.
I think they're still talking about that.
They'll never stop.
Yeah.
And that sort of hurt me because I'm one of these patriotic kind of monks, you know. And then it was also going to be in 96, which was around the corner when I made my decision. I thought, well, my guru's going to, he will be 100 years old. So that, let me offer this as a gift to him. You know, my thanks, my gratitude for the wisdom that he's given me. And also that I stay in the temples or the monasteries, what we call ashrams, and the food can be quite rich. So I thought, let me have a break. Let's eat more simple. Let's go for the wraps and maybe something we call khichdi, which is like a blend of rice and dal beans, like lentils, all cooked down quite well. And you add your veggies in there. You put some turmeric in there, which is really, you know, like a miraculous spice, and some cumin seeds and ginger, and give it that curry flavor. So those opportunities were opening up. So here you go. That's several reasons for going out there. Apart from, let me have the full-on monk experience. Let me see things up close. Let me see what I've missed all this time, and let me see all the species of life, and let me learn detachment, meaning whatever the weather, just plow through it. It could be cold rain, it could be a snowstorm. We do have those in Canada, by the way.
Yeah, I can believe it.
And, you know, intense heat, because, you know, in the prairies, like what you have called the plains in the U.S., can be super intense, you know, that sort of desert dynamic.
Right.
Super hot in the day, cool at night. Go through it. Just go through it and learn detachment from the ephemeral things, the things of this world.
Is sannyasa, I mean, sannyasa, I think, is the idea of renouncing your ownership of things. Is that something that you have done?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's kind of like a formal vow that you take. First, you're what's called a brahmachari, which means you're kind of in training, and then later on, you may take sannyas, which means, okay, this is it. Life is simple. Be like a rolling stone. Keep moving. Collect no moss.
Yeah, right.
And so that's what I took in 84, those kind of vows. I never got married. Okay. And that's one thing. I never got into a deep relationship with anybody, although I tried and I said I was a misfit. Wasn't working out. Maybe I'm meant for something spiritual, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's another one.
Oh, yeah.
Another, the bears have been here.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah.
The So you talked about going through, you know, you're going across the prairie. If it rains on you, if the weather gets bad, if it gets really hot, you just go through it. You just deal with it. It's part of nature. How do you prepare? We've already got the answer to the question, how many pairs of shoes it takes to go across the North America. But how do you prepare otherwise for this? I mean, when I go on a long bike trip, I got my bike so loaded with camping gear and a tent and a sleeping bag and pairs of clothes. But how do you... how do you do it? I guess that's where I was kind of going with this.
From the practical point of view, I'd have a person with me.
Okay.
Not right beside me. He'd be in his vehicle. He's taken some time off of work or he has the extra time. And we keep our extra clothes in there, our tent, because we do a lot of tenting. And that's it. He'll drop me off at the spot from where I left off the day before. And then check on me a little later on, just to see if I'm still alive.
Right, right, okay. Well, that answers a lot of questions for me, because when I've in the research that I've done since I heard yesterday that you were in town, if you'd like, we can go to the left. We're on the Leakish Trail, and we'll get off this 2.9 section of the Leakish and head on the 5-kilometer section of the Leakish. Okay. I like it up here. It's got great views out of over the ocean, mountains on the other side of the Cook Inlet. It's a little cloudy today, so we might not see them, but...
it's all... part of the exploration.
Yeah.
Every day we should explore.
But I was thinking that I was imagining you traveling across the country with nothing but a saffron robe. And I thought, well, I don't know how that doesn't sound very safe. And I'm not talking about people, but just, I mean, we've all been in some storms that you wouldn't make it through the night if you didn't have a little bit of support, maybe somebody there with a tent.
It pays off just to have a support person in case anything dangerous could come about. And, you know, this is a big part of the culture. We call it Sangha. You have to have an associate with you. Life can be dangerous if you're just always by yourself. You know, your mind can take over. And so you get a little bit occupied in thoughts, in communication with a companion. So mind you, the support guy would be quite busy. He'll go out and make contact with media and make arrangements for us for speaking engagements and also do a little bit of the cooking if he had the knack. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm taking over.
Right.
You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. And you're traveling a lot.
Yeah.
And I think you're bringing a message in your travels. And what is that?
Well, the message is... look at the other side of yourself that you're ignoring and try to see that, appreciate that there's life, a very deep kind of living organisms all around us through the trees and so on and through the ground that's under us, the stars up above, and try to see the divinity behind everything. It's got nothing to do with what you're affiliated with as far as a denomination is concerned. Just talking about life. So that naturally comes about, evolves through the walking and through these natural places. And of course, I would go on trails and I'd also, you know, hit highways and just for exposure and just for a little change. You know, believe me, when you're walking across, whether it would be Alaska or Canada, anywhere, most of the time you're in wilderness or in farm country. And once in a while you'll hit a city like, say, Vancouver or something like that, or even Chicago. You could clear that in a day and a half from one end to the other. And then, you know, it's kind of fun in the beginning because you have the speed and you got all the excitement of city vibes. But then... doesn't take long. We say, let me get out of here.
Right. Yeah, I was speaking with some, a couple of years ago, I was on a long bike trip, and I met some thru hikers. That's a term that you've probably, are you familiar with that?
I've never heard it.
Well, thru hiking, I hadn't heard it until I talked to these people either. They were hiking the Pacific Crest Trail.
Oh, okay.
From the Mexican border to the Canadian border.
Oh, right, right. Yes, yes.
And so the Appalachian Trail is a famous thru hike. Now there's the Western, I think they call it the Continental Divide Trail or something like that. There's the Pacific Crest Trail, and there's other trails around the world. And when you do one of those, that's referred to by thru hikers as thru hiking. And
I thought hiking means you go through something.
But right.
Anyways, I accept that.
Well, I think the idea is like you're just passing through. You're starting one place, and you're not doing a loop and coming back there 3 hours later and getting in your car and going home and going to the restaurant. You are you're going until the end of the trail. So in speaking with these through hikers, I had a chance to have some really interesting conversations with some of these people, and they. For one thing that they told me was that it really required, I asked a woman named Pearl. Well, Pearl was her trail name. She was Hannah when she wasn't on the trail. But she said, when I'm on the trail, this was her second through hike. She had done the Appalachian Trail previously, and now she was doing the Pacific Crest Trail. She's about halfway through it. And she said, the thing about through hiking is that the only way you're going to make it is if you decide ahead of time, you make a commitment that I am doing this thing. And when it gets hard, a week or two into it, no matter what happens, I'm committed and I'm going all the way. And I wonder on your first hike across Canada, whether you had some times of doubt there where you're thinking, what am I doing?
I write about that in the book, The Saffron Path, the book that I just put out. And I finished walking the mountains in BC and came into Alberta and sort of rested in a place called Calgary. Of course, you know that place. And I was having a restless night, and I just thought, what have I gotten myself into? And I looked at a map, you know, those good old-fashioned maps. You pull out, you know, the paper, and several divides are in it, folds, and you look at it. Oh my God! You looked at it. Really? I've only done this amount. I got all this rest of it. What was I thinking?
Right.
But you know, I was very committed, and I said, I have told my friends and family, I'm doing this walk, and that's it. Thick or thin, pain or pleasure, just go through it. You have to have that kind of conviction, and that's it.
And I suppose in your situation, you had told people you were doing this, so there was an element of, well, I can't bail because I've kind of...
They're depending on me.
Right.
I think people would understand if you pulled out, but, you know, I was not... I wanted to be a little bit of a hero. That's all.
Yeah. Well, you already, at that point in your life, I suppose you already had experience making commitments to things. I mean, you had become a monk, and that's not something that everybody just does in an afternoon.
You know, you have to think about it pretty deeply, yeah.
Well, anyway, I will I'll remind our listeners, or in case you're just tuning in, my name's Adam Verrier. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer here on Alaska Public Media, and I'm going for a walk today with Bhakti Marga Swami here in Kincaid Park, right here in Anchorage.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
In case you're just tuning in, my name's Adam Verrier. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer here on Alaska Public Media, and I'm going for a walk today with Bhakti Marga Swami here in Kincaid Park, right here in Anchorage. And we're surrounded by a bunch of ravens that you might have heard squawking earlier, and they've been checking us out the last half a mile here and stepping over bear poop and moose poop as it goes. You talk about going for a walk as meditation or as a place to explore your inner self. I have a lot of friends, and I'm not one of them. I can sit inside on the couch for a week and be just fine. I don't usually do that, but if I had to, I'm not like some of my friends who, if they don't get out for a walk or a run or a bike ride or walk the dog or ride a horse or something for an hour or so, they say they just kind of go crazy. I would think that walking across a continent is sort of an extreme example of that. You have a lot more time to explore. You have a lot more time and leisure to explore your own curiosities, your inner self, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And it is time off, you can say, downtime in a way, because, well, you're not dealing with the complexities of sort of an urban lifestyle or in a community or a neighborhood with lots of people and all their emotions exploding all over the place. So it is a simpler life. It's a great break. I think it's the ideal vacation. The idea would not, don't go to Vegas, don't go to Disney. Consider just going for a long walk, whether it's around one of the Great Lakes or just you're going on the Great Divide, what you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the things to do if you want to really build some character, build strength, you know. And I must say, things do wear down. I just got two knees replaced within the last year.
At the same, in the same sitting?
No,
or?
Well, no, actually one at a time. Otherwise, you're not going to get
around. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, right. And I thought, well, yeah, let's do it one at a time. Because I wore down the cartilage, and that's just what happens when you're kind of a sports person and you go at it on the extreme level.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a knee surgery a few years ago, and I was kind of complaining about it. Maybe we'll walk up here and take a look around. It's a great viewpoint up here. I was kind of complaining about my knee wasn't quite going to be the same, and the surgeon said, "What do you think you're going to live to be 70, 80 years old and die with the knees of an 18-year-old? That just doesn't happen. I mean, not if you like to get out and do stuff."
So. Exactly. And the tide is down.
The tide is out, yeah.
Out, as they say, yeah.
Yeah, tide is down. Yeah, this across the way, we can't really see them, but we have the mountains on the other side of Cook Inlet over there, and this is the wind farm on Fire Island.
That's breathtaking.
And then over on this side, of course, we have the Chugach Front Range.
We just came from a drive from there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What brought you to Anchorage?
Anchorage? I have some friends here, and I was given the assignment, a mandate, to see what I could do about establishing a mission here, trying to help a center for higher consciousness. And to do that, I've gone to a few places already since I've been here, just to get a feel of the people and everything like that. And I would just say this, I don't want to sound too evangelical, but there's a need for the spiritual component in people's lives. I just think there's something very much missing. And I'm not proselytizing for any one way. I would just love to see people just get a little more, you know, to look at their spirit within.
Mm.
You know? And I think that's what has always been there as part. Our indigenous people were really strong in that department. And I think just because of all, you know, the fast-paced life, the gross consumerism, and you know, you can get anything at a moment's notice, and, you know, like easy gratification, and I think we have to look at things in a more karmic way. What can I do to be a little better citizen, help others, and extend a hand? And, you know, just by walking, of course, I'm making a green statement. You know, use the body for what it's meant for. We are meant for, from head to toe, to walk. It's a machinery, piece of machinery meant to do that. And to be purposeful, intentful about it. Do it with the cause of reaching out and connecting and taking time to absorb and also to then share. So that's one of the reasons my coming to Alaska, apart from the wanderlust of the place, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, what you saw on screens about Alaska, that's kind of like what you get. Like we saw that bull moose, you didn't have to make a big effort to.
Right.
he's just there, you know.
Right, doing his thing, yeah, whether we're there or not.
And what I've noticed, the wildlife here, at least in this area near the city, I guess, they're quite comfortable with humans being around, and they're not going to be so docile or just run away and be shy about it and scared. So, you know. Yeah. I've seen almost everything now. I'm missing on the wolverines, though. I'd love to.
You don't see too many. I see them occasionally, but you kind of got to be up in the mountains. And I spend a fair amount of time up there, but I only see maybe one wolverine every 5 years or so.
Wow.
It's not too often.
That's great. And, you know, when you do see these creatures of wonder, it does kind of deepens your appreciation for the universe.
Yeah.
Just because everything's so, this creature is so different from that one, and of course this one's prey for the other one, and the other one has to, and then, or one has to pray for not to be eaten.
Right.
Pray or pray.
Yeah.
And it's just a part of the adventure. You go to, to learn, to come out richer. And the whole ordeal about walking, of course, is to accept what we call tapasya, which means to voluntarily accept a little inconvenience in order to gain strength, you know, strength of character, just to deepen your appreciation like that. And it makes you certainly humble, and that's a good spot to, if you want to be successful even in business, you got to start humble.
Yeah.
And stay that way, by the
and
way.
Stay that way, right? No matter how successful you get.
It doesn't matter how many billions you make, you know, stay that way, and then you'll always have some friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what's a little bit behind all this, you know, trekking and getting out and seeing everything in the world. And as far as Alaska goes, it's just a place I hadn't been to yet. And, you know, and I can check it off on my list. Okay, what's next?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned seeing a lot of animals, and that reminded me of an incident that my dad was a forester. I grew up in New Hampshire, in northern New Hampshire, mm-hmm. pretty close to the Quebec border.
Yeah, and, beautiful area.
Yeah, he loved, loved being a forester so that he could be out in the woods, which is what he really liked to do. And he described, I remember his coming home one day when I was probably in seventh or eighth grade, and he had this incident where he was out pretty deep in the woods, mm-hmm. and there was a moose browsing, and it saw him, and he saw the moose. Uh-huh. And my dad thought, this moose doesn't seem to mind that I'm here. This is in New Hampshire. And so he just stayed where he was. Mm-hmm. And the moose slowly walked toward him while browsing. Uh-huh. Before the moose got there, my dad sort of just put his hand out. And the moose sort of walked in to put his head against my dad's hand.
Wow.
And then continued on browsing and walked off. Wow. And it really made a big impression on my dad. I know he came home and said, it wasn't like the moose didn't know I was there,
right,
but it was, the moose wasn't afraid of me, and I wasn't afraid of the moose.
He didn't get defensive, and he felt like some connection, warmth.
And I think that was, for him, it was a very spiritual experience. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you talk about getting out and walking. It's not every monk who walks across the United States. It's probably not every monk who goes for, I don't know if it's part of the culture at all, or if it's completely a separate thing.
Yeah.
But you clearly are a curious person about the world, and it seems like walking is a way to explore.
Well, you're going at a speed which is most natural, and then you're going to see a lot more. You'll pick up on details that you can't on a bike, no offense, or in a car, or in a plane, and that's really what I wanted to happen in my sojourn, so... that's what's taking place. Yeah.
Well, the same has occurred to me. I like motorcycle trips. I go on long motorcycle trips. I like long bicycle trips. Uh-huh. And I don't typically go for long walks, but I go for short walks.
I'd say it's pretty much in the same caliber.
Yeah.
You know, people just going out and having an adventure and but being connected to the natural elements.
I think the observation, what I have observed in those three types of mm-hmm. of outdoor journeys is that on a motorcycle, it's really great because you can see a lot of stuff in a short period of time when you're going down the road at 50 miles an hour. You can see a lot of things, but of course you don't see them that closely. You don't see every ant because you're driving past them and hopefully not over too many of them. But the of course that's the downside to that. Cycling, you see so much more. But you're still going kind of fast. And when you're walking, you see everything. You see everything that's there.
Right. That's right.
I find actually the motorcycling to be the most...
Exhilarating.
The most meditative, actually.
Sure.
I find that on a long motorcycle ride out in the countryside, that's the place where I can do my best thinking. And for that reason, I only go by myself. I'm not a motorcycle gang guy, and I don't ride a loud motorcycle.
Yeah.
But you must have had on these. You've crossed the continent five different times.
That's right.
And what has been the? You've talked about internal exploration, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we've talked a little bit about that versus external exploration, mm-hmm. seeing what's around the next corner. But if mm-hmm. you've been across the country a bunch of times, you kind of know what's around the next corner.
Yes.
So the walking is I suppose it's an end unto itself. I mean, it's not the destination, it's the journey.
Yes, yeah, of course we've heard that saying before, yeah. So definitely it's each day is a new experience, and like if you go around the corner, like when I was in the Rockies, you know, a grizzly bear was coming, towards me, and I had a friend with me at that time. And it was interesting, you know, so just by seeing that guy coming towards us, and by the way, a motorist did come toot his horn, he took off, then he came back later, changed directions, and was right behind us, and that was an adventure in itself. We started to chant mantras for our safety, and we didn't know what was going to happen, but we felt a kind of confidence. I think that's what really builds up in you, the confidence that you're tapping into not just the natural world, but the otherly worldliness. And so I think that's a real plus. So each day it just mounts up to, you know, you eventually just accumulate this, you know, appreciation for the world and build up on your meekness, your, hey, I'm a tiny little speck in this world. Why do I have such a big ego? You know, the ego's what gets me into trouble. Somebody said ego means edging God out, you know, or edging the universe, but E-G-O-G sounds better. So I think that's a big thing, you know, get your ego beaten up on by the natural elements and sometimes by people as well, because you do get some rowdy folks out there sometimes.
I can believe it.
There's some biased folks, and, you know, it's like I met a few people and... but I can count on my one hand how many times it's happened, either going one way or the other way across U.S. or Canada. But they'll say, get out of town or something like this, scream it out and just slow down enough for you to hear it, and then buzz off so you don't have a chance to respond. But, you know, right. I said, well, you know, I'm not really going to stay in any town. I'm not staying in your town. I'm just going through anyway.
Don't worry, I'm leaving.
here's what, just to give you a little bit of... You know what I'm talking about, give you a little sample. So initially you feel a little hurt. Okay, why did that person, what does he have against me? I never met him. I'm a stranger to him. Why can't he be more welcoming? And so when you're processing this in your mind, say, listen, if I get a chance a little later on and I meet that guy, the other end of town said, you know, your town's not worth staying in. You know, but then your heart has to soften. You have to take a little time to process these things and say, I've got to come across sensitive, okay? And just some or other approach, if the opportunity arises, hey, you said something to me, can we talk face to face? And
yeah, let's continue the discussion.
Yeah, because, and the thing is, what you have to come to terms with is, it's not my problem, it's the other individual's problem. There's some insecurity there, you know, some uneasiness that he or she is feeling. Just because I'm coming in and I'm dressed in a sort of a different way. And there's more opportunities, more times so many people kind of like respect you because they've seen so many kung fu movies with Buddhist monks doing things. I've been called Grasshopper, which was an old TV show. I've been called Dalai Lama. I've been called everything, Jesus, Buddha boy, you know, Kevin Spacey, because I resemble the actor somewhat, and a moving traffic cone, because the color looks a little orange. So from a distance, they say, oh, it's moving. What is that?
Right.
And you really do stick out against the, whether it's this kind of landscape, very greenish, or if it's more like in a deserty section like Utah and Nevada. Well, that was incredible going down the, you know, I mentioned I had to get off the road, the highway, Lincoln Road sometimes, just because it was just getting crazy, too many lanes. So we hit the Highway 50, which is, they dub it as the loneliest highway in America.
Oh, across Nevada there.
Yeah, Nevada. And so people come just to check out what's it like to be in the loneliest part of America.
Right.
So, you know, you really do stick out. Doesn't matter where, you know. And there's something about the desert, which we don't have those kind of deserts in Canada, but, you know, you really, there's the clarity there. There's something really, any pictures you take there, it's, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah. 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 I've been on the loneliest highway, but I did it on a motorcycle. So about a half an hour, it was behind me.
It was fun.
Didn't feel that lonely.
we were in one town. I can't remember what it was, but the members of Highway 50 were having a party. And it was like one of those places in Nevada. And this is quite common. Half a ghost town, you know. But, and we met the mayor who was there. We somehow or other, through some channel, myself and my two support guys, we were invited there. And then also there was a fellow from Flint, Michigan, who was walking across the U.S. as well. He was 2 days behind me, and he managed to get there as well.
Okay.
So, you know, we didn't go for the heavy drinks because I'm a monk, right?
Yeah.
For the soft drinks, but it's just nice to connect with people there. And, yeah, the mayor of the town, he was the sax player there, so he provided the music. And it was just nice to be with people of varying backgrounds. And, you know, because if you're a monastic order, you may, you know, kind of, you're trained somewhat, watch who you associate with. You don't want to get into the materialistic channel, you know. Mm. And so, you know, I've learned enough that I can talk to anybody and not feel I'm intimidated by them, or they'll be, you know, let's say, go their route. It's fun. I mean, you might call yourself a biker, but I met some rough and tough looking guys.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one story. It was in East End. That's the name of the town. It's population 600, and that's in Saskatchewan. I'm sure you may have heard of that place, Saskatchewan. Yeah. And some bikers came by, and I like to just wave at everybody. Hey, how's it going? You know,
yeah.
I'll do this, you know, the thumbs up, or I'll do the peace sign, or I'll do the wave, you know. And so these guys are looking at, what is that? What is that? They go into town, they come back about an hour and a half later, and they pull up in front of me, said, oh, what did I do? What's going on?
Yeah.
And so the guy, that sort of the alpha amongst the guys, took off his helmet, pulls off his gloves in a very dramatic way, puts them to the side, and comes in. We're just in town. We read the paper, you're on the front page. We want to just congratulate you. And there were some really tearful moments too, like you do have people pulling over and they ask for, can you pray for me? Mm. Something's happening with me. And the biggest thing on everyone's mind pretty much is about relationships, whether it's going bad or good. And first of all, people pull over. This is what happens on a regular day. Would you like a ride? If they don't know what you're up to and they haven't read the news or whatever. And I said, well, I'm going across the country. I said, really? So tell me a little bit about what's it for, and this and that. Where do you stay at night? And how are the mosquitoes? And all this stuff. And then if there's a little bit of a lull, we'll switch directions, and I'll do the question and say, well, how are you doing? How are things in your life and your relationship? And then, now suddenly they'll open up, and, you know, and they're happy to get things off their chest. So what gratifies me to a large extent is being able to meet those kind of people and be there for them, just even just to be a good listener. That's all.
To unload some worries.
Yeah, I don't have to counsel necessarily. But just to listen, because like one guy, he pulls over, I read about you in the paper, it's great. Well, can we talk? Because I was going steady with a girl for 5 years, and she just took off with my best friend, so I'm really not in good shape right now. And so, you know, you're kind of there for them.
Yeah,
which is great.
Well, as you
good
said,
feeling.
yeah. Your walks, it sounds like you try to stay as close to people. I mean, that's a large part of the goal of this. It's not to go out in the wilderness and see nothing but grass and trees. It's to interact with people.
Yeah,
as a
little
traveler.
Bit of this, you know, what I'd say, Adam, is a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I find it's really good to just have the time by yourself for the first 3 hours. In the morning. And I will start early. I'll start at 4:30 in the morning, before the sun comes up. Just chant my mantras a little loud, so in case there's some puma around. I'm here,
Yeah.
and then, of course, then media may come, or people see you. And I have a habit of walking on the middle of the road, like if it's a two-lane, and just to get a little flatness, because I didn't realize this before I went on these marathons, but the biggest bugger, if I can use that term, or culprit, is the terrible tilt, you know, the shoulder of the road, which goes on a slant. And you don't think about that before you go out there. So it's better to be on a kind of a trail that may run along, but that really can do something to your sciatic, and it really does, and it's done some damage. And I would try, if I was to do this again now after the surgery, I would definitely consider, you know, going on those rails to trails kind of scenarios, which means there might be less people that you interact with, but the ones you will meet are sharing the experiences with you.
Yeah, so and they're going slower. They're walking, riding bikes,
you know, yeah. And they'll stop and then you chat and you've got this amazing connection, camaraderie that's gelling really well. And you just feel very fulfilled because you maybe met five meaningful people that day and it just brought you on.
It would be easier and more conducive to meaningful conversations, yeah. if you only talk to three or four or five people a day, mm-hmm. rather than when you're working down at the bank and you're talking to people all day long and the last thing you want to do when you get out of there is to talk to more people. Yeah. And so you're heading down to the coastal trail with your headphones on and a sign that says, please don't talk to me.
Have you ever seen in big cities people get onto like whatever they have, like a, whether it's a metro or a subway or something like that, no one's talking to each other. Just had it with people.
Yeah.
It's like that in the morning when they go to work and when they come back.
Yeah. So what would you say to people who, most of us who are listening to this, to the Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio, are not monks. Right. Most people who are listening to this have families and relationships and jobs and something that keeps them busy for most of their day, and they are hoping they can get 45 minutes or an hour, hour and a half in the day for themselves.
Yeah.
I haven't read your book, but I'm looking forward to reading it, and we'll have this on our webpage for the show. You've just published a book called The Saffron Path. What would you say to people who want to get an element of some of the things that you've talked about, the introspection, the meditative element of being of going for a walk, but fit it into a day where you also have to get the kids to school and you got to pay the mortgage.
Yeah, that's right. Well, a lot of it has to do with, you know, just good, time management. And you owe it to yourself to be a little bit of a monk every day. Like if it is 45 minutes, so if a half hour, that'll make a big difference. Take some time to, because my feeling is that when people take a little time to themselves, that is like prime time to sort a lot of things out in your head. Where there's puzzles, you'll be able to put the jigsaw pieces together, you know, during that time of contemplation. And I'm not talking about overthinking, I'm just talking about thinking enough about your own situation and how you can improve and how you sort out a particular problem in a relationship or things are not going so good at work. I think if you don't have that, like, you got to go in the canoe or something like that. And every guy especially has to be doing that,
yeah.
You know, and going in the cave, as they say, for a little bit. You got to fit it in. And I find the best is a good time, if I can give some suggestion on that. Go in the morning, which is what I do.
Yeah.
Just get out in the morning while everyone's asleep, you know. Just make sure you're not up late.
Right, okay.
And so what I'm saying is that there's a little monk in all of us.
And it's a matter of exercising that and recognizing it and using it.
Just as much as there's a little punk in all of us, there's a monk in us.
A little bit of monk in all of us. Well, I think that's probably a good ending point. I've really enjoyed my discussion and my walk here at Kincaid Park with you. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk with me on really short notice. I only heard you were in town. I'm really glad that I managed to track you down. My guest today has been Bhakti Marga Swami, who's in town only until tomorrow. And thank you so much for taking the time.
I appreciate it so much, the walk and the talk.
Well, I'm. Thank you. I also want to thank Eric Bork for producing the show. And I'm Adam Verrier, and I'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.